This is Preach Jacob's Podcast. All right, I'm recording now. 3, 2, 1. Ladies and gentlemen, this is another episode of the Preach Jacob's Podcast. Thank you guys for listening. Make sure that you check out our next event at Soul House at Kroger Center for the Arts. Go to KrogerCenterForTheArts.com to check out our new show, our Soul House Conversation Series that we're doing for October the 22nd. We're going to have a ColaCon reunion conversation. For people that remember, ColaCon was the hip-hop comic convention that I did some years ago. We're going to have an amazing panel that's going to have hip-hop artist Jay Live, Dre Lopez, Ebony Toussaint, and comic book writer Stephen Prowse. Get your tickets now to go to KrogerCenterForTheArts.com or go to all my social media stuff. Just go to Preach Jacobs, blah, 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 blah. You can get the tickets there. It's 10 bucks. It'd be really, really fantastic. And we're going to have some artwork from Dan Lish in an art exhibit that we have coming up that's going to focus on hip-hop arts, culture, and pop art. Really, really, really excited about that. Thank you to our sponsors, Big Media, for putting this out. Thank you to Soul House, me, for doing this shit as well. And on top of that, our other sponsor, Tussie. Tussie, Tussie, ooh. All right. So this is, I guess you would call it campaign season. And we have someone that made the field trip to come to the crib to have a conversation. This person is a community advocate. She's a mental health advocate. Originally from Darlington, South Carolina, she's a social worker, founder of Wello Health, and running for a city council district 4. We're really excited to have Ashley McCall on the pod. What's going on?
Bow, bow, bow. We gotta get you some horns. Hey, Preach. Nice.
How you doing?
To be here with you.
I'm glad
all the amazing
be here.
Things. That was an absolutely amazing introduction. And I'm just really excited to be here and share a little bit more and just be in the space.
Listen, man, I'm really excited. I have a few questions that I want to get into that I'm really interested in your perspective on it. Thank you for being here. And I guess to start it off, I guess we can kind of tie in your origin story, what made you want to run in the first place. But one of the things I thought was really, really interesting, a personal observation that I had, was that during the pandemic and Black Lives Matter movement and what was happening with George Floyd, there was all these things that were kind of coming in at the same time. There was a lot of connective tissue. And one of the things that I think came out of that during the pandemic slash what was happening to Black folks nationwide is that you started to see so many young people of color opting to run for political offices. And a lot of young people of color that was saying, I wouldn't have done it under any other circumstances. And so seeing younger people, younger Black people, younger Black women starting to run for political office, I always am interested in that. So my question would be, what was one of the things, the defining moments that made you say, I want to run for District 4? And was this something that you thought you would be in, you know, in earlier ages? Were you thinking that you would be involved as a civil advocate?
So, quite literally, no, I did not. I did not think this was in the cards for me. I think what really guided me to this moment has been a lot of different things, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm from a very small town. Like you said, I'm from Darlington, South Carolina. It's very rural. Quite literally, Doesville is where I'm from.
What's it called again?
Doesville. I grew up on a dirt road.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, all yeah, right. Yeah, hey, very, no judgment. No judgment.
But having that experience, and I also come from a veteran household. Mm-hmm. So my dad is a veteran, and he's always instilled in me service, being mm-hmm. of service to people and how you actually do that. And as he transitioned back home from Iraqi freedom, my dad was a combat medic during that time. It was a social worker who was influential on that transition back to civilian life for him, but more so for the family. Like, my dad came back, I'm be fully transparent, he came back with PTSD, alcoholism, mm-hmm. and all the things. Mm-hmm. And having a social worker that not only guided him, but the family as well, I'm like, I want to do what they do. I want to be impactful in my service, in my purpose. Mm-hmm. So I went to school for social work at the South Carolina State University. And that's where I kind of got my kickstart within the world of politics, because when I was there as an undergraduate, I interned at the South Carolina State House with the Black Caucus. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, this, I want to be at the intersection of policy, where policy meets people and how we can be impactful in the things that we're doing. But also, I got to see the true behind the scenes with legislation, right?
Absolutely.
So I was just like, maybe I can do this in a different capacity. So I did start as a social worker. So I've always been in public service in some capacity. I've been a licensed social worker for nearly a decade. So I started at the VA. It started with helping veterans and their families navigate through challenging systems and understanding policies that quite literally affect them, but they had no say in shaping it.
Yeah, well, you know what, and I'm interested in hearing that, because I'm always interested in the entry point of when people get involved in politics, and I think that being a social worker is, you know, that is, you know, being someone that works with a community, that is being kind of a civil servant. How do you think your background as a social worker, how does that translate to how you think you can apply that to city governance?
Right, yeah. I think I quite literally see things from a different lens, right? So when we are seeing individuals who currently hold seats, most of the time they come from background of development, real estate, all of those, they're positions that are necessary and needed. But when they fill the whole role of council, right, that's where it gets a little blurry. There's no balance in that.
And for the people that's listening, District 4, where is that?
So District 4, so I live on the northeast side of Columbia, near Clemson Road, and we kind of circle all throughout. So it's the biggest district in the city of Columbia. So we kind of got some areas like Lake Catherine, Galaxy, King's Grant, but in addition to like Fort Jackson as well, northeast Columbia, so a little space off of Clemson Road, Wood Creek Farms, all of those other areas. So some downtown, but some also on the northeast, right? What was the question?
it's all good. This isn't 60 minutes. You don't have to get nervous. But no, it's essentially just saying that, how is your experience? Because everyone has like a entry level. I remember there was a conversation I had with a at large council member years ago, and he was a council member that was a blacksmith. And a lot of times when I was interacting with city council, or when I was getting HTAX money from the government, you're interacting with city council. And he said to me, he says, you know, I'm a blacksmith. I understand what artists go through, because technically I'm an artisan, right? And so I'm always interested in hearing people's entry points into politics. So I was wondering how something specific as being a social worker, how would that like impact how you see yourself leading and governing in District 4?
Absolutely. Well, one key point is here in Columbia is individual or homelessness, right? So my first job at the VA, I started within the Healthcare for Homeless Veterans program. So when we talk about homelessness, I know a lot of times there has been a focus on just one aspect of homelessness and what that looks like. And that's normally mental health or addiction. But it's way much more than that. It's complex, right? And when we don't have the understanding, the experience, the skills, we're solving, sometimes the solutions of a problem is opinion-based rather than researched, backed, and based on solutions that actually help individuals that are experiencing homelessness, right? So I think my lens as a social worker, I've seen and worked closely with people that are affected by the policies that were maybe supposed to serve them, but do not, and it missed the mark. I quite literally have been I've been a part of the system that hasn't been working for me. I'm a mom of two. You know, I've lived on things such as EBT, Medicaid, all of the things, and know how those systems navigate and work, but sometimes it doesn't work the best for you. So having that lens of both a professional and a personal experience, where I am speaking from an experience of expertise, but also an experience of my own, I bring a different lens to, I would bring a different, well, when I win, hey, to city council, because I have that different understanding, right? I'm not just talking at the problem. I lived it, I experienced it, and I've helped provide solutions to what's happening.
Well, okay. So the things that you're talking about that you've been involved in, that you've seen firsthand, give us some ideas. Like if there's three things that you see that is not working as efficiently as possible, or something that needs to be tweaked, or something that you think needs an overhaul, what are three priorities that you see that you can kind of help out with District 4?
Yeah, so again, homelessness is a huge topic here in Columbia. Mm-hmm. The population of people that are being that are currently unhoused is growing. However, we have gotten the most money. The city of Columbia has gotten the most money that it's ever had, but the population has been growing. So something is missing the mark here. So with the lens as a social worker, we work on things that actually work, right? Actually, that's been researched, that has modeled, and we've seen things that work. So sometimes, and it may be in good spirits, you know, when you think of the problem, but you're not really addressing, you're addressing the symptom, not the cause. So we're addressing the homelessness, but what about, you know, poverty? What about depression, access to workforce development? So my solution is having a one-stop shop where individuals can come to reach that service and that care. A lot of times there has been duplicate services all across the city, and people have to travel here, there, everywhere to receive the same pieces of services that they could possibly get in one space, and having access to that quickly. Two, workforce development, trainings, and then involving our youth in these programs as well. So a little bit, that's where we can think about public safety as well. Having programs that are proactive than being reactive in a lot of our situations that has been happening. And three, quality of life. We're losing a lot of things that keep people here in Columbia. We losing Woody's. You know that?
I heard. Yeah.
Okay. So I'm upset about that. Listen,
I ain't gonna cry about that one. It's okay.
Okay.
But I'm old. I stay home.
We're losing key entertainment that makes people want to live, work, and play here in Columbia. So also, you know, making sure that we're meeting that demographic as well, and we're meeting all generations, and serving individuals in a capacity that we all can be seen here in Columbia. And that's the Columbia that we want to see here.
I'm interested. Give me more information when you're saying the one-stop shop concept. Like, how do you see this if and I know this is imaginary, but like if funding wasn't an issue, are you looking at there being a facility that can help unhouse people, that can also help mental health issues, that can also help, you know, add another one? Like, how do you see that working?
Quite literally, yes. So when we think of systems like a hospital, right? That's most of the time a one-stop shop. Walmart, you don't got to go too many different places to get what you need. But a lot of times when we think of individuals that are unhoused, they are also experiencing how do I get transportation to get to this side of town, right? Mm-hmm. There's other complexities that causes barriers to them receiving the services that they could quite literally probably get in one space. And the city of Columbia has done a good job with trying to provide some wraparound services, but there's ways that we could expand that care as well, and meeting the population directly.
Okay. Does that make sense? I'm interested also if you're talking about, you made a comment about, you know, the Woody leaving and Columbia not retaining. I guess that's one of the biggest things. They talk about retention, where I've done events with CORE, which the whole idea is get young professionals involved and show them how cool Columbia is so they can want to stay. Yeah. So I would say two questions. What retained you to be here in Columbia? And what are some of the things that when you speak to your potential constituents out here in the community, what are the things that they're talking about that might make them say, I want to stay here, or if this doesn't happen, I want to leave? What are the concerns that you're hearing from the community?
The people want to be outside.
What do you mean by that?
So they want to have places that they can go to actually enjoy, but not have to go to Charleston or Greenville. Like when I'm thinking about, like, all right, the parking situation.
So we just
right?
need the Essence Festival to keep
up. Yes, we need some. We need quality, but we need quality things that work for, you know, all generations here in the city. We have multiple generations at the table, so we need to have things that serve a purpose to all of us, not just some. But what retained me here is, as a mom of two, I'm a mom of two. I'm building a business in this city. Mm-hmm. I am raising a family in this city. And this city has quite literally been of service to me. So I want to make sure I'm as service.
Tell us about your business and tell us how, because I'm a business owner and I've been through, you know, ups and downs. Tell me some of your approaches to you being a business owner or a business person, seeing some of the concerns that small businesses might have, that you think that, you know, this is an inside track. Not only are you someone that's a business owner or run a business, you're also getting involved in, being on the policy side as well. So what are some of the concerns that you're hearing about small business folks, and what are personal experiences that you've had as well?
Yeah. So I own a mental health tech startup, and basically it uses AI to connect our users with therapists for clinical needs and then case managers for non-clinical needs. So access to, or just social determinants of health really is what it's called. So access to housing, transportation, food, because a lot of the times from what we've seen in our research shows is that, you know, when we're addressing the symptom and not the cause, it's a revolving door. And as a business owner, I can see, well, although I don't have a brick and mortar like yet, mm-hmm. I can see the challenges when I am speaking with other business owners, how that affects them. Again, we're losing quality businesses mm-hmm. just due to a lot of ordinances or laws that are impacting their ability to expand or just to stay here, period. So what happens after that? You know, like, how do we're going to. So, again, I live on the northeast side. Mm-hmm. I want downtown to be like a sandhill area. You know, we're losing quality businesses. So how can we attract and retain more businesses here that want to stay here, but feel that they are supported here? Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And so me, Ashley, I don't have all the answers, right? So that's why it's important for, you know, these business owners to let us know what they are experiencing and how we can solve that problem. But me, myself, mm-hmm. I can see the barrier to entry, especially as it pertains to funding. Who gets the funding and how does that go? Mm-hmm. There's again, it's so complex and a lot of things are happening, but for small businesses, I support small businesses.
Well, I appreciate that, and this is a lot of stuff I can talk to you about off mic too, about what the things that I've seen has been kind of some issues with small businesses. I think that you know, we were having a conversation earlier about the plight of the potential local politician, where a lot of times you have to raise this much money to get this much visibility, and it subtracts from the idea of, hey, community leader, where mm-hmm. where it's like, you know, you don't have to be a rich person, you just have to be an engaged person in the community. And a lot of times there's people that want to have businesses in Columbia, and sometimes between rent prices, between fees, between all these other things, and don't get started with restaurants. There's a lot of restaurants and bars that are closing down because of the liquor liability stuff. So there's a lot of conversations that can be had about small businesses. One of the things I thought was really interesting, reading about what you're working on, you have an organization called Wello Health. Mm-hmm. It is a mental health and technology platform. And I think you spoke about that briefly. But tell me, what are some of your concerns that you're seeing that aren't being fulfilled with mental health? And I would say kind of more of a personal story for me. I've written extensively about the idea of mental health and how it affects people in my community, Black community. I recently wrote a column mm-hmm. For Suicide Prevention Month last month, talking about, I have a great uncle that had passed away, that died by suicide years ago. And it was a conversation that was never had. Wow. And it was the taboo of the community with mental health, where it seems as this stigma. So I would ask, tell us more about Wello Health, and tell us, like, what are some of the challenges that you see the community have when there's conversation with mental health? Because a lot of times if you're campaigning with something, when you're speaking about unhoused community, when you're speaking about people that are dealing with mental health, a lot of people see them as, well, this isn't my problem. How do you get people engaged that don't think that those things affect them as well?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I'm so sorry to hear about your family member that passed away.
Thank you.
And to also be transparent, that was a part of my why and why I started Willow. Mm. So in 2021, I lost a sibling, my younger sibling, Kobe, who died by suicide here in the city of Columbia.
I'm sorry to hear that.
And that is what led me to start Willow Health. So, you know, my background has been in service, but my purpose has also been in loss.
Mm-hmm.
So I started Willow Health because I saw a disconnect within mental health and the LGBTQIA plus community. So that was a part of my brother was part of the LGBTQIA plus community as a Black gay man here in Columbia, right? Mm-hmm. And those and facing, you know, a lot of challenges that we didn't see on the outside, and it's and it packed me so much because it's like, you know, I'm sitting here, I'm talking about mental health and well-being, and this is a thing that happened with my sibling, but I didn't want it to happen to anyone else, and how I can build true legacy for my brother Kobe McCall, and you know, do the things that I'm here to do. So when I think about purpose driven, that is a part of my why, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the challenges in mental health, and when I am speaking with, you know, voters who, but now I think people are quite literally understanding the importance of mental health and that experience around it, because it affects so much more. So a few things that I stand for is community health and well-being. How we can partner with local agencies and bringing in agencies that can provide the adequate but quality care for individuals, whether, you know, they are experiencing homelessness or just an employee, you know, at City Hall. Public safety, it falls under that as well. A lot of our individuals who are experiencing mental health concerns, their entry kind of goes to Alvin S. Glenn, right? And they're not receiving the adequate treatment that is needed for them at that time. And mental health and health quite literally affects all of us in some capacity. So as I am talking to voters or just individuals within my community, period, it is about highlighting how this does affect everyone. Quite literally affects all of us, whether that's economic standpoint, because where do individuals that are homeless go? A lot of times they utilize hospitals for their first standpoint, and it's a revolving door because we're using the funding for hospitals or any other local agencies where, again, like I talked about first, where there's a lot of duplicate services that individuals aren't able to reach. But it's an economic standpoint as well. So having solutions that are, I want to say, just again, research back, not opinionated in what we're talking about when we're trying to solve an issue. Because we got all this money, we're doing all these things, but is it really solving any issue? So when we look at models like Houston, Texas, who was able to decrease homelessness by 60% in the last 10 years by using research-backed housing models, or Denver, Colorado, we need to make it more of what's factually based and research-backed rather than like, oh, this is what I think may work. We can try this, throw a little money at it, and it's causing a revolving door around the solution. There is no solution.
I think one of the things that we were talking about earlier off mic about you know, your campaigning has led you to reaching out to younger people and having conversations with the HBCUs. You're from an HBCU as well.
East South Carolina State University.
Say again.
Bah, bah, bah. Bah, bah, bah. South Carolina State University. Go Bulldogs.
So one of the things that we were talking about is, and that's something that everyone with the connective tissue kind of go through, right? Because you have people always wondering, how do we get younger people engaged? And when it's something that is maybe entertainment wise, you know, it's not like kids can't get engaged, because we just had NBA Youngboy here last night, and I bet you that was sold out, right?
Couldn't get a ticket. My kids wanted to go. I know we would have had a bout.
I'm telling you this right now, and I say that for a reason, right? Is that, you know, one of the things I thought was really fascinating about NBA Youngboy is that he's not, and I'm not too familiar with his work, but every younger person that I know loves him. Mm-hmm. And his music isn't on radio. His music isn't on all these major platforms, but yeah, he's doing arena tours.
Yes.
He ain't playing at the Senate.
Yeah.
He playing with the Lady Gamecocks play, and I'm sure that was sold out.
The big league.
So I say that to say, young people do have a history of galvanizing the troops and showing up. They show up when they feel like something speaks to them, something is important to them. So it's never an issue about, oh, young kids don't know how to come out here. And I think that question is always applied to voting, right? But people just assume, oh, kids just don't know how to do this. Or kids just don't want to wait in line, blah, blah, blah. But kids wait in line all the time. They wait in line to go to a concert. They wait in line to get some shoes. So my question is, if you have a 21-year-old or younger that may be sitting across from you that isn't inspired to vote or get involved with local politics, what are the things that you feel that you can say to them to get them emotionally engaged and to get in line and vote for November the 4th?
Yeah, so I do have a 21-year-old right here, my intern Lily. Bah, 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 bah. Bah, bah, bah. But on a serious note, kind of going to art, right? Mm-hmm. Art has always been political. Mm-hmm. So when we think about hip hop and that intersection, art has always been at the standpoint of that. Especially when we think about, you know, N.W.A. or mm-hmm. Tupac, a lot of music speaks to what we are experiencing. Mm-hmm. And meeting young people where they are. So that's one thing I make sure I'm doing. So I'm at the places where, I guess a lot of times that's off the campaign trails, really. And that's at the bars, the clubs, where people and their families hang out, restaurants, mm-hmm. and meeting people actually where they are. Because we see a lot about decisions being made on a future that some will never see. Mm-hmm. So how can we bring the future to the table? And I tell people all the time, and I tell younger individuals right now, you are, yeah, people say you're the future. That's cute. But you are also the now. Mm-hmm. What can you do now to be impactful? And I think also we have to be willing to mentor people. Mentorship is key. Mm-hmm. We see people staying in these spaces and not watering the next seed or the next generation to come behind them. And that's a disservice, because as they transition out, we have a gap. There's a huge gap. Nobody's prepared. Nobody's ready to take the seat.
Well, how do you do that? Do you go to a young person, hello, yeah, can I be your mentor?
Yes. No, but I tell them quite literally, I'm going back to South Carolina State University. Mm-hmm. How can I get some interns? The legacy does not end with me. It should not end with you. So mm-hmm. My goal is not to be a career politician. My goal is to bring as many as I can, water as many seeds as I can to come behind me and do the work with me. All right. Truly bring them with me. And I think within just all both parties, we need to do more of that, watering the next seed, watering our next generation now, not in the future. Bring it now.
All right.
If you had to get out of the crowd, if you're scared, bring it now. Because, again, we're wasting talent. We're not keeping talent. We're not retaining talent. And we won't keep or retain talent if we keep doing, what's the definition of insanity? Doing the same thing and respecting and expecting different results. No. Mm-hmm. If you want to be the change you wish to see, be it. Do the things. Do the things now. So I think that's what I would say to a 21-year-old. You don't gotta ask somebody, hey, can you mentor me? Absolutely. Sometimes I've done that, even though it may have fell on deaf ears, but you keep asking. Keep showing up, and not only showing up, but a little bit of showing out. I don't need to hear no more cute speeches. I need to hear some passion. What is it that you want to do, and how, what can be action backed behind that, and how you plan to carry it forward? So I appreciate having my 21-year-olds out here interning and being engaged in what's happening right now, instead of listening to somebody told me to, I need to wait. Wait on what? I'm in this for purpose, not for anyone's permission. And again, the time is now, and I'm here to do that now.
I can't believe that before we got started, I was concerned whether or not you're going to be loud enough on this microphone.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But that is not it. Yeah. No, you're good. I need you to talk, because there's nothing worse than someone just whispering. Once again, if you guys want some more information, go to McCall for SC Com. Right then and there, you can get the about with what she's doing. You're going to get an option to donate. And also for people that want to volunteer, you don't have to be 21. You can be older. You can be younger to help out with the campaign. Do you have any last words that you would have for the community?
Come see me at McCallforSC, McCallforSC.com, and vote for me on November the 4th. Let's go.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming. This is once again the Pre-Shakers Podcast. Once again, I'm going to tell everyone to go to KogerCenterForTheArts.com to get tickets for the next Soul House Sessions, which is going to be October the 22nd. We will sell out of that, so please get your tickets. It's going to be a ColaCon reunion. You guys are going to really, 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 really enjoy it. I will also say that our event that we're going to have at CMA for the Keith Haring exhibit has been pushed back to January the 29th. I'm going to do a speech for that as well. You can also check me every Tuesday night at Lula Drake playing jazz records. Once again, if you guys want to buy any tickets or all that good stuff, go to KogerCenterForTheArts.com or go to all my socials, which is Preach Jacobs. What is your social media? People want to follow you as well.
McCall for SC, McCallForSC.
All right. That's on Instagram.
Instagram, all that too. Facebook, right. Or Purposely Ashley. You know.
Oh, okay. Well, word. Well, thank you guys. Thank you so much for coming to the podcast. Once again, this is the Pre-Shakers Podcast, sponsored by Big Media, Koga Center for the Arts with Soul House and Tussie. Ooh. Thank you guys for coming. Until next time. Peace.
Peace. Bow, 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 bow. Bow, 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 bow. We got you just Lawrence, man.
2023 is solely owned by its host or hosts and is distributed by Big Media LLC. Copyright 2025, all rights reserved.